Chuck Anderson is a guitarist from Philadelphia who is a recording artist, has a couple of fine albums out, performs live all over the Philadelphia area, and is a jazz guitar educator. Chuck Anderson, our guest tonight here on the New York Tonight Show. A very good evening to you, Chuck.
Good evening to you, Rich, and how are you tonight?
I'm pretty good. Has the polar vortex reached Philadelphia yet?
Yeah, well, the polar vortex went over Siberia, turned left, and according to our meteorologist in Philadelphia, took a circuitous route to torture us.
Well, that's the Bebop Triangle, Philadelphia, New York, and Siberia, I guess, right?
That's it. Everything comes in threes.
Hey, let's talk about the albums. You self-produce your albums, which I think is a great thing. It used to be years ago people would have to go scrounging around the record labels hoping for the best. And the technology has gotten to the point where if you want to do your own thing and you've got a couple of bucks to do it, you can do it. And both of the albums are just excellent albums. The first one is Free Fall. That one came out, what year did that come out? That came out like 2009, I guess, right?
Yeah, 2009, 10, I lost track.
Yeah.
Somewhere around there.
And the latest one, the follow-up album, Nighthawk, from 2013, just a terrific album. This one is live at Jamie's House of Music. Is that a place there in Philadelphia?
Yeah, that's one of the good listening rooms. You know, as the jazz clubs have decreased, we've kind of began to look around at, you know, homes and listening rooms as a place to, kind of portray our art to the public. And that's one of them. It was a private home converted to a performing space, permanent stage, PA, the whole thing.
Sounds like a very intimate type place to play. How many people were you playing in front of there?
Well, of course, it was a house, so it was limited. we packed the place with say 65 people, all in someone's living room, so it was still a pretty big living room.
That's not a bad crowd, you know. Here in New York, some of the smaller jazz clubs, you're lucky if you can get 100 people in the place. Some of them are really tiny places. I'm thinking of a place like Iridium. I don't know how many more people than 65, 70 people you can get in. Iridium or the Metropolitan Room is a smaller place. Even the places that are considered to be a little larger, like say the Jazz Standard, maybe 200 people tops. You know, they're all
sure.
They're all small spaces, and thank God
they
here
are.
In New York they all fill up too. That's a great thing. Now, do you prefer to record in front of a live audience, or do you like to record in the solitude of a studio? Do you have any preference?
Well, I've done it all ways. Particularly, we did a DVD as well, which was called Live at Chaplin's Music Cafe. So that was an audience, and that was a live video. I've done the Nighthawk. We did in an interesting way. We went to the performing space that was Jamie's House of Music there, and we actually did the album live. But interestingly, with no audience. Yeah, so in other words, we took what we might call the best of both worlds, and that is we went in a performing space, we went up on stage exactly as we do concerts, and we did everything in one take, and no waiters or waitresses dropped any trays, and, people didn't make a ruckus. So it felt like a performance, but without any of the distractions. Of an audience, which can happen as well. You know, particularly if something goes wrong. Like I said, somebody moves a chair in the middle of a ballad and you've got it on your track. So the other one was done the traditional way, in a traditional recording studio. But I like all the different ways. I think each one, has an advantage. Although I must say the way I record, in a way it all feels live because we don't do multiple takes of them. I mean, we pretty much play the tune through, and unless the drummer, fell off the stool or I dropped the guitar, that's pretty much the take we take.
Yeah, warts and all, and you've got to live with it. If there's what did Sinatra used to call it, an anchovy in there, it's on record. And you got to live with it the rest of your life, so you better come prepared.
isn't that true? Well, at least we're not recording on wax.
Oh, really? So. I know. Well, everything is so easy now. Digital. I don't think people who are a little younger and have grown up in the digital world realize how great the digital world is compared to the old analog world where you had to record on tape. I know being a radio guy, we used to do, you know, editing commercials, editing programs, and it was barbaric. You had a razor blade and you had tape and you had little snippets of audio tape all over the place. Now it's a drag and a click and a save. You could even undo the edit if you want. It's a cakewalk now to do editing and recording of music. Hey, question. I love your style, and I hear an awful lot of Wes Montgomery in your style. Don't tell me that Wes isn't an influence, because that's what I hear in your style mostly. Outside of Wes, who are some of your great influences when you were coming up as a young guy playing jazz guitar?
I think one was Johnny Smith. And, you know, it's surprising because this is a guy that won the Downbeat magazine's Best Guitarist in the World poll 10 years in a row, and today he's virtually unknown. Very few people know who Johnny Smith is, and yet he was very influential in the early jazz guitar days, kind of the diametric opposite of Wes. You know, Smith had an awful lot of traditional technique, and was very not blues based, or what could we call it, unblues based. Whereas Wes was very blues based. Wes told me that he said the blues is responsible for the fire in jazz, and that's something I certainly would agree with as well. But Smith was not a fiery player, but he was a brilliantly accurate player. So he certainly was. They were probably my two biggest influences, and my influence from Wes came from an encounter I had with Wes when I was 16 years old at Pep's Music Bar on North Broad Street in Philadelphia. And that personal encounter, and as nice as Wes was to me, I do have an unusual distinction, I think, and that is I was in there, and I don't know exactly how this all happened. I still think my father bribed somebody, but I'm not sure. And I turned around in my chair, and Wes Montgomery was standing there and held out his hand, said, "Hi, I'm Wes Montgomery." And, of course, he was my hero. So, I wasn't real articulate. He asked if he could sit down at the table. I said, sure, you know. So then he said, "What questions do you have for me?" I asked him about his trademark octaves, and I had proposed that he played it a certain way, and he laughed, and he said no. So he went back to the stage, got his guitar, his Gibson L5, brought it over to the table, handed it to me, and proceeded to show me how he played octaves. So I don't know if this is totally true, but anyway, I've been clinging to it for a lot of years. I could be the only person that Wes Montgomery taught octaves to directly. So I certainly come by that influence honestly.
Well, that's a great story. That's a terrific story. Who was he playing with at that club? Was he with Wynton Kelly or a different group?
No, it was Mel Rhine, and I'm trying to think of the drummer. It was a trio. Organ, guitar, drums. I can't think of the bass, but it was the Wes Montgomery trio. I remember Mel Rhine was on organ, you know, the foot pedals and the
whole
thing.
Sure.
You know, and the drummer, why can't I think of the name of the drummer? Anyway, it was whatever drummer was with Wes and Mel Rhine. It was him.
No matter. But that's a terrific story. It's great that you had a nice personal experience with Wes. Anybody I've talked to, I never met Wes Montgomery. He was gone in 68. I was 10 years old in 68, so I really didn't have, you know, I was still listening to Led Zeppelin and the Rolling Stones in 68, you know. But everybody I've talked to who ran into Wes Montgomery, either played with him or just ran into him, you know, personally, everybody tells me what a sweet guy he was. What a horrible loss. He was gone. He was, what, 42, 43 years old?
Terrible loss. He had good Midwestern stock. Mm-hmm. You know, he didn't have the New York vibe or the Philly vibe or the L.A. vibe. He had that, you know, solid citizen Midwest attitude. And I only say that because I'm from the Midwest.
Here on the New York Tonight Show, Philadelphia guitarist Chuck Anderson, his latest album is called Nighthawk, recorded live at Jamie's House of Music, and this is the title song from that album.
Thank you.
The very cool sound of our guest tonight on the New York Tonight Show, that's Chuck Anderson and the trio, Chuck on guitar, Eric Schreiber on bass, Ed Rick drums, title song from his 2013 album Nighthawk, the Chuck Anderson Trio. Now, Chuck, you were telling me you actually have how many books written on jazz guitar?
14 at last count.
14 books. Half the people I know haven't read a book, no less written a book. 14 books on jazz guitar. And I guess you do master classes as well, huh?
I do, yeah. I do a lot of master classes, yes. At big stores, I'm in February, I'm going out to Sweetwater in Indiana, right near Wes's old home.
Right, right.
Fort Wayne, Indiana. I'm doing a big jazz master class there. So that's coming up, and I fit that in between my private teaching and my Skype teaching and my online jazz guitar studies program and the master classes. And, it keeps a filled day. I don't have a lot of time off.
Well, do you have a separate website for that from the website that you have for promoting the music? If you want to give that website on the air, please feel free.
Terrific, yeah. Well, the site that basically features me as a performer is ChuckAndersonJazzGuitar.com, and the one that is centered around my books and my educational methods is HowToLearnJazzGuitar.com. HowToLearnJazzGuitar.com. That's the education site, and both of those sites, they're kind of cross-reference each other, because it depends on, sometimes people, look to the plane, and then, they get interested in the education, and sometimes they first come over in the education and then get interested in the playing. So we have them kind of cross-polarized there.
Excellent. Now, how's the concert scene look? Group is a couple of places from what I see here in late November and December.
Yeah, we're going to, a week from tonight, November 21st, we're going to be in Bethlehem at a place called the Bookstore Speakeasy. I don't know what it is. I haven't been there. I think it's a bookstore. But
or a speakeasy, one or the other.
I don't know which one. It could be either one. But I do know that at least my agent tells me that they have jazz there in a very serious way, 4 to 5 nights a week. Pretty interesting. Bethlehem has become a busier mecca of performance, surprisingly, even than Philadelphia. Philadelphia, the city, is much more limited on venues, and the venues seem to be kind of spreading, west or north or whichever way that is. But, Bethlehem has the big music fest in the summer, and from what I understand, they have quite a few venues. So we'll be there then, and then December 5th, we'll be at a place called Melody's Cafe. That's in Ardmore, Pennsylvania, which is a eastern suburb of Philadelphia, like big 20 minutes, 30 minutes from Center City. And basically, that's kind of the new places to play with the jazz clubs being in shorter supply, at least in this area. And that is, it's a coffee house that, has a permanent stage and features various and sundry things, jazz of which is one of them. And, others, other nights might have singer-songwriters. The Portland jazz guitar player John Stoll and I did a duo there. I don't know if it was a year ago or 2 years ago. And, in fact, John's coming back into town again. And we're thinking a little bit about doing a guitar duo album together. But that's the next two places. I just finished a master class at a place called George's Music, which is a chain of high-end music stores in this area, and I just did that last Saturday. So there's a couple things coming up.
Now, the two albums, Free Fall from 2009, the latest one from 2013, Nighthawk, if somebody wants to get their hands on these, and I do recommend them, they're very listenable albums, catchy stuff. I mean, the stuff that you wrote and the stuff that you played written by other people, just delightful albums, really nice albums to have. If somebody wants to get their hands on them, how do they do that?
Well, probably the best bet is to get to the sites. In fact, I've just had my sites all redesigned, and if everything is working properly, we have the hard copies available there. And we also have the albums there set up for digital download as well. And I'm sure there are other places as well. You know, it's so hard in this digital age to keep track of where things are.
Sure.
Every now and then I see my things for sale places, and they seem to be selling in those places, but the money trail doesn't seem to be headed in my direction. I don't know where the money is, but the albums are flying off the shelf.
Welcome to the world of jazz. Hey, man, I want to thank you for joining us tonight here on the New York Tonight Show.
It's my pleasure.
All right, our guest tonight on the New York Tonight Show, guitarist Chuck Anderson.